Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Radha Madhava Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopijana Vallava Girivara Dhari Gopijana Vallava Gopi Janavallava Girivara Dhari Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana Yashoda Nandana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Jana Vallava Girivara Dhari Gopi Janna Vallava Girivara Dhari Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Tira Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivrajaka Acharya Stodhara Satasi Srimadi Sri Bhakti Vedanta Swaman Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Jayam Vishnupada Paramahansa Parivrajakacharya Stotara Satasi Simad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki Jai Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Sila Haridasa Thakur Ki Jai Prem Sekha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Siddhaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinatha Shamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham ki jai, Mayapur Dham ki jai, Jagannath Swami ki jai, Gangamayi ki jai, Jamunamayi ki jai, Tulasi Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol. So, Srila Prabhupada's edition of Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, this is Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 16, Text 21. This chapter is Jai and Vijay, cursed by the sages. Yes, Tam, Vivikta, Charita, Anuvartamana, Na, Atyadriyat, Parama, Bhagavata, Prasanga, Sa, Tvam, Dvija, Anupata, Punya, Rajaha, Punita. Sri Vatsa, Lakshma, Kim, Aga, Bhaga, Bhajanas, Tvam. Jastang Vivikta Charitair Anuvartamanam. Yastang vivikta charitair anuvartamanam. Natyadriyat parama bhagavata prasanga. Natyadriyat parama bhagavata prasanga. Sa tvam dvijanu pata punya rajak punita. Sa tvam dvijanu pata punya rajak punita. Sri vatsa lakshma kimaga bhagavajanastvam. Sri Vatsa Lakshma Kimaga Bhagavajanastvam. Yastang Vivikta Charitair Anuvartamanam. Yastang Vivikta Charitair Anuvartamanam. Natyadriyat parama bhagavata prasanga. Natyadriyat parama bhagavata prasanga. Satvam dvijanupata punyarajak punita. Satvam dvijanupata punya rajak punita. Sri vatsa lakshma kimaga bhagavajanastvam. Sri vatsa lakshma kimaga bhagavajanastvam.
So the ladies? So, Prabhupada's translation, Yaha means who, Tam, Lakshmi, Vivita, completely pure, Charitai, devotional services, Anuvartamanam, serving, Na, not, Atyadriyat, attached, Parama, the highest, Bhagavata, devotees, Prasanga, attached, Saha, the Supreme Lord, Twam, you, Dvija, of the Brahmanas, Anupata, on the path, Punya, sanctified, Rajaha, dust, Punitaha, purified, Srivatsa of Srivatsa, Lakshma, the mark, Kim, what, Aga, you obtain, Bhaga, all opulences are all good qualities, Bhajana, the reservoir, Twam, you. Prabhupada's translation. These are the four Kumaras speaking, isn't it? O Lord, you are exceedingly attached to the activities of your pure devotees, yet you are never attached to the goddesses of fortune who constantly engage in your transcendental loving service. How can you be purified, therefore, by the dust of the path traversed by the Brahmins? And how can you be glorified or made fortunate by the marks of Srivatsa on your chest? Prabhupada's purport. It is said in the Brahma Sanghita that the Lord is always served by many hundreds of thousands of goddesses of fortune in his Vaikuntha planet. Yet because of his attitude of renunciation of all opulences, he is not attached to any of them. The Lord has six opulences, unlimited wealth, fame, strength, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation. All the demigods and other living entities worship Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, just to get her favor. Yet the Lord is never attached to her, because he can create an unlimited number of such goddesses for his transcendental service. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, is sometimes envious of the tulsi leaves which are placed at the Lord's lotus feet, for they remain fixed there and do not move, whereas Lakshmi Ji, though stationed by the chest of the Lord, sometimes has to please other devotees who pray for her favor. In other words, she's distracted. Lakshmi Ji sometimes has to go to satisfy her numerous devotees, but tulsi leaves never forsake their position, and the Lord therefore appreciates the service of the tulsi leaves more than the service of Lakshmi. When the Lord says, therefore, that it is due to the causeless mercy of Brahmins that Lakshmi Ji does not leave him, we can understand that Lakshmi Ji is attracted by the opulence of the Lord, not by the Brahmins' benedictions upon him. The Lord is not dependent on anyone's mercy for his opulence. He is always self-sufficient. The Lord's statement that his opulence is due to the benediction of the Brahmins and Vaishnavas is only to teach others that they should offer respect to the Brahmins and Vaishnavas, devotees of the Lord.
Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutare Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Samaniti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschatya Deshatarine Yastang Vivikta Charitaranu Vartamanang Natyadriyat Parama Bhagavata Prasanga Satwang Vijanu Patapunya Rajak Punita Sivatsa Lakshma Kimaga Bhagavajanastvam.
So, the Kumaras here respond to Krishna's statements, which Prabhupada says somewhat bewildered them. Krishna spoke very humbly, and here they were in Vaikuntha, which is the most opulent place anywhere. It's the most majestic, royal, impressive, awesome, awe-inspiring place. And the Lord of Vaikuntha came out and said, gosh, I'm sorry, it's all our fault, and they started taking a very humble position. So the Kumaras, who were sort of up for this majestic encounter, were actually bewildered by Krishna's humility and somewhat soft-spoken nature, you could say. Prabhupada says in the purport to verse 15 of this chapter, the sages were almost too puzzled to speak before the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the first time. And the hairs of their body stood erect due to their extreme joy. So, in text 14, the verse itself says, the Lord's excellent speech was difficult to comprehend because of its momentous import and its most profound significance. The sages heard it with wide open ears and pondered it as well, but although hearing, they could not understand what he intended to do. So now, they're not that they're refuting Krishna, but there's something about Krishna's statement which they took as not precisely, literally, what Krishna ultimately meant, that he was teaching something by speaking in that way. So, understanding that context, that's why you have to, there's an old saying, the devil cites scriptures. So, it's important when we read the, otherwise someone could just pull this verse that we just chanted, someone could pull this out of context and say, well, or pull out of context some of the verses that Krishna spoke to the Kumaras and say, well, actually, Krishna was once contaminated because he himself says that he was purified. And so you can't become purified unless you were impure. So we have to understand what's going on here. These are, in one sense, intellectually sophisticated conversations. This is not like the sort of simple, tempted to say simplistic, but I don't want to offend anyone, somewhat simple theology you find in some traditions where God comes down, zaps people, thunder and lightning, you shall do this, you shall not do that, period. And the relation, if you think about it, the relationship of, let's say, a marginal citizen, someone who's sort of in and out of jail or
always skirting the edge of the law and sometimes crossing the line and so on and so forth, gets away with it sometimes, doesn't. This person sort of lives perpetually in a legally gray area, or even as a criminal. And so the government, the relationship with the government, the relationship with the government is one where the government is trying to instill fear in this person, trying to intimidate this person so they'll behave properly. And the person is, you know, sometimes when the person receives the full brunt of the government's punishment, the kind of person gets their act together and then sort of forgets a few minutes later and again tries to cheat and bend the laws and everything. And the government again comes smashing down, hammering down upon them. And this is kind of what you get, for example, in certain scriptures. Certain scriptures, say if you read the Old Testament objectively, it's this constant battle where God is threatening punishment. God is punishing. The people regret their transgressions and behave properly. The punishment is lifted. They forget how they were punished. Again, they drift into transgressions. Again, the hammer comes down. And so it's this kind of tug of war going on perpetually. And here, but if you think about it, the relationship a person has with the government, a person who actually is part of the government, a person who has an extremely good relationship with the government and has deep personal exchanges with leaders of the government. And so there's all kinds of joking going on, and there's different, much more subtle etiquette. And so what we're seeing here in the Bhagavatam is that advanced, more, you could say, relationally. Is that a word to read it? This more sophisticated, more subtle type of relationships and speech on a high level, on an intellectually sophisticated level. All kinds of subtleties and nuances and points being made, sometimes by type of poetic hyperbole, and so on and so forth. So this is what's actually going on in the Bhagavatam. It's a most advanced scripture in the sense that it talks about God and devotees of God at a very high level. So if we look at this verse, the first point is that contrasting that Krishna is Parama Bhagavata Prasanga. Prasanga means association, attachment, intimate. You could translate it in English as intimate association. And so basically what this verse says is that Krishna is a person who considers Bhagavata Prasanga, intimate association with his devotees. It's good to close that door firmly during a class. Just so Krishna is a person for whom Bhagavata Prasanga, intimate association with devotees, is parama, is supreme, is most important. Therefore, this little compound here, Parama Bhagavata Prasanga, refers to Krishna, for whom Bhagavata Prasanga, intimate devotee association, is the highest, parama. And this is contrasted with the verse, the statement that Krishna na atyadriyat, which means does not regard too much. In Sanskrit, there are a lot of things in Sanskrit like English, just like we can say in English, like, I don't like that too much, or I'm not wild about that. That's not something I like too much. So I say the same thing in Sanskrit. Krishna doesn't regard too much. In other words, less than the devotees. He doesn't regard too much the goddess of fortune, who is described here as Anuvartamanang, which means literally following him, or submitting to him. With Vivikta Charitayar, which is completely pure devotional services. Vivikta, normally the way the word Vivikta is used, it means secluded or private or something which is, yeah, secluded and private and in that sense. So, like, for example, what is that? Vivikta Sevi Lagwashi? Where is that, Dravida? The Gita?
Yeah.
That one should live in a secluded place. Vivikta Sevi. And what is that in the chapter 6 where it says one should live in a secluded place? talking about the yoga system, chapter 6. What is that verse? Famous verse. Anyway, that's what vivikta means. Vivikta, the central meaning, or the most common meaning of vivikta, is secluded, apart, private. And so, therefore, also this vivikta charita. Charita means activities, things you do, services. That the goddess of fortune is submitting to Krishna, is following Krishna, is serving him with activities which are secluded, private, intimate, and therefore pure, because you can't. If you think, why does Prabhupada translate this completely pure? It's interesting to see the logic. Two things come to mind. For one reason, because you can't serve Krishna intimately. You can't get into a secluded, private, intimate situation with Krishna unless you are completely pure. And also because the word vivikta, in a very technical, literal sense, means apart, separate. So pure in the sense that all impurities have been put aside. That a separation has taken place between the pure and the impure. So again, if you look at Prabhupada's translations, which at first glance may seem non-literal, there's actually a fascinating logic which is always there. If you follow the logical steps from the literal to the idiomatic, you get a sense of how pure devotees think and how Vedic culture thinks. So anyway, yastang vivikta charitaira nuvartamanang. And then, of course, I want to say, like, little knowledge is dangerous. People who are kind of very neophyte in their knowledge of Sanskrit sometimes get bewildered. They say, well, this is not a literal translation. But if you actually know what it says, then you can see that the translation is quite ingenious. And, of course, Prabhupada is following the previous acharyas, so a little knowledge of Sanskrit can be a dangerous thing also. So this word adrita is found. I'll give you a few cases where this word is found. The famous verse, it says that arujya krichena parang padang, those who climb up, sort of hike their way up to the spiritual platform and then fall down again, because anadrita jushmadangraya, the verse is addressed to Krishna, because they did not respect your lotus feet. They did not respect your feet. They did not. So this is, again, the word anadrita, the same word, adrita. This is also found, what is that, revealed in one of the first verses of the Bhagavatam, that adritam sutamasinam satkritam. No, I'm sorry, it's another thing. Anyway, natyadriyat means they did not, Krishna does not regard too much, he doesn't revere too much these intimate services of the goddess of fortune. Now, one thing has to be said here. The goddess of fortune is certainly a devotee of Krishna. I mean, we would hardly call the goddess of fortune a non-devotee or a karmi or something like that. The goddess of fortune is not a non-devotee. So the question can be raised here, how, in one sense, how can you compare Krishna's attitude toward the devotees with his attitude toward the goddess of fortune, who's one of the greatest devotees? I mean, it's not a minor league position to get to be a goddess of fortune. So why this contrast? The answer Prabhupada actually explains in his purport. The point here is that the goddess of fortune is being presented here, understood here in this special philosophical context as the goddess of fortune who gives everyone fortune. And the point here is that Krishna is not so concerned with getting fortune from someone. That's the point. So if you, the goddess of fortune here has her wealth-giving hat on, you could say. And so it's looking at the goddess of fortune as someone who gives benedictions. Krishna is not really concerned about getting benedictions from anyone, including the goddess of fortune. That's the point. So seeing her as the boon-giver, as the wealth-giver, that's the sense in which Krishna is not into it, as we see. But taking the goddess of fortune as a not only a devotee, but a great devotee, he certainly desires her association. Otherwise, why would Krishna hang out with people he's not interested in? The goddess of fortune is always with Krishna. Is he just sort of stuck with a bad date or something that goes on forever? So obviously Krishna unlimitedly appreciates the goddess of fortune. That's why he's always with her. in her role as a pure devotee. But in her role as a wealth giver, he's more interested in his devotees. So when the goddess of fortune, you could say, is kind of doing that particular job of giving boons, it's not so fascinating to Krishna. Just to see this kind of like this, you know, cosmic jeopardy game where you win fortunes and prizes and things like that, if you can answer the right questions and do the right rituals. So anyway, so that's what's going on, among other things, in the first two lines of this verse. Then, a rhetorical question. The sages ask a rhetorical question indicated by Kim, what, or how, or why. And you can see from Sanskrit all the interrogatives, all the words that ask questions, like how, what, why, when, where, all start with a K sound, like Kim, what or why, and Kasmat, which literally means from what, and Kutra, where, and Kada, when, and Katam, how. And you have the same thing in Romance languages, like, say, Spanish. All the question words start with a K sound, like cuando, when, which is just Sanskrit kada, cuando, or como, how, Sanskrit katam. Anyway, this goes back to Latin, how from Sanskrit all the question words, interrogative words, start with a K sound. I thought you'd find that interesting. Think of that over your morning coffee. Just kidding. Decaf. I was just kidding. I can just see it now. Headlines in VNN. Anyway, ISKCON guru leads disciples astray. Anyway, so getting back to this line here. Satvang dvijanu patapunya rajak punita shivatsa lakshma kimaga bhagavajanastvam. Here's the question. The sages are saying you, Krishna, the last word of this verse is twam, you are bhagavajanas. Bhaga, of course, is the famous word for opulences. It's the word in Bhagavan. They're using the same word from Bhagavan. And, I'll tell you very quickly. No, I won't tell you very quickly. I was going to go into a long thing on that word bhaga. Maybe see if there's time at the end. But anyway, bhajana means a recipient. Recipient or possessor. A recipient of something, a possessor of something, in the sense of containing it, of receiving it. And so Krishna's bhagavajana, literally the possessor, the recipient, or the container, or the reservoir, as Prabhupada puts it, of bhaga, of opulences. In other words, he's Bhagavan. It's just another way of saying Bhagavan. Bhagavan or bhagavajana, same idea. And so the sages say, because you are bhagavajana, Kim, the rhetorical question, how is it possible, aga, how did you go? Literally, the ga here and aga is just our English go, it's the same word. Como, anyway, how did you go to, in the sense of how could you get into a situation, how could you go to a particular state wherein something is true? It's the word's being used idiomatically here. So in other words, how could it be true about you that you are punita? You are purified by raja, the dust. That's why rajas, by the way, that's what it means, the mode of ignorance, like rajogun, because the old meaning of rajas in Sanskrit is just dust. So to have a dusty brain or to have dust on your brain means it's ignorance, right? When the sky gets filled with dust, you know, the lights go out, it gets dark. So the old original Vedic sense of raja is dust, and therefore rajogun, you could say literally, is the dust mode of nature. And Lord Chaitanya, of course, also talks about cheto darpana marja, cleaning the mirror of the heart, and it's the dust on the mirror which makes the mirror unable to reflect light. So anyway, the word rajas here means dust. So how is it possible that you go to that situation where you are purified by the dust, the punya raja, the holy dust of anupata, which is found on the sort of like the beaten path. Pata means path, same word in English. I mean, it's spelled the same. It's just, there's a word that hasn't changed at all. Pat is path, it's spelled the same. And anu means seguidamente. In other words, anu means continuously, following one after the other. So it means like the beaten path, you know, like the well-worn path. A path where the Brahmins always go. The path where the Brahmins always go, so that it's the beaten path. It's the common path of the Brahmins. So how is it possible that you are purified by the dust, the holy dust, of that beaten path of the Dvijas, of the twice-born? And how is it possible that you are Sri Vatsa Lakshma? Vatsa, of course, means calf. Sri Vatsa, this jewel that Krishna wears on his chest. How is it possible that that becomes your Lakshma? That becomes your symbol, your auspicious symbol, something which somehow brings fortune to you as being your symbol, your identification. So how is it possible that you are Sri Vatsa Lakshma, and how is it possible that you are Punita, purified by the dust of the Brahman? Because Krishna, in his remarks to the Kumaras, was taking a humble position and saying, well, you know, I just got to be God because got a little Mahaprasadam at the Hare Krishna temple. And the Kumaras, at first they were bewildered and sort of speechless, and they're saying, well, wait a second. That's not really true. So that's what's going on here, among other things. Again, this high-level intimate exchange where God is not simply throwing down thunderbolts and lightning, but also having, you know, joking. Not merely joking, but just making a point by taking a humble position and making the sages think. So any questions on these points? Yes, Dravida.
But Aishwarya is wealth, but it comes from Ishwara, so it comes from the street. Here is the Lakshmi street, well, but
that means that it's beautiful. Yeah, so why don't you name them? And I'll Aishwarya from the word Ishwara. Well, it reminds me of that saying of the golden rule, the one who has the gold makes the rules. So, if you consider, it's translated as wealth, Aishwarya, because if you consider what it means to be a lord, it means to have control over things. And so, wealth here is actually understood in a more dynamic way, because there's something passive about merely possessing something. Like you can have money in the bank, and it doesn't do anything. You don't do anything, the money doesn't do anything, it's just, you know, the only activity involved is once a month looking at it and feeling secure or something, or being proud. But so merely possessing is really not the essence of what it means to be wealthy. The essence of having wealth is using it, spending it, employing it, engaging it. And so here you have actually a dynamic sense of being wealthy. In other words, Aishwarya, from the word Ishwara, you could say lordship. But lordship means lordship over. And to be lord over something is to possess it. And so therefore, that would be the dynamic sense of it. What's the next one? Aishwarya, jasya, samagrasya, virya. Virya means courage or heroism. Aishwarya, jasya, samagrasya, samagrasya. Samag means, is a word for complete, by the way, because agra means a point. It can be like the point of a lance, or it can just be the point. And so sam, like sankirtan, means all together. So samagra literally means like all points. That's just a way of saying completely. There is something which covers all points. And so Aishwarya, Samagrasya, Virjasya, Jashasya, fame, Shriya, which you could translate as beauty. Jnana, Vairagya, Yoschaiva, and then knowledge and detachment. So yes, if you take beauty, if you take Shriya as beauty, which we should, otherwise beauty wouldn't be in the list. So Shriya must be taken as beauty there. And then if you think of another verse which is translated as the Lord possesses everything. Isha Vasyam Idang Sarvam. idang sarvam, all this. And in the simple pronoun this in Sanskrit commonly means this world. It just means this world, like in Om Purnamadak Purnamidam. Ada, which is the most distant demonstrative pronoun. In other words, it's like this, like this, that, and that one over there. And so ada is that one over there. If you know Spanish, it's esto, eso, and aquello. And so this is complete, that over there is complete. Meaning, and if you know, I mean, the Vedic literature always uses the word in this way, this world, that world beyond. And so, Isha avasya midang sarvam. Now, the word vasa, of course, means residence. Vasa, right? Like Krishna's called, what is it? Like Brijvasi. Brijvasi, one who, a vasi is one who lives somewhere. So, those who live in Braj are called Brijvasis. And, or Krishna's called, the name for Krishna is Srivas. He's the vasa, the residence for Sri, the goddess of fortune. Or Sri Nivas. Which means the same thing. Sri Nivas or Srivas just means the Vasa, the residence of Sri. So then Avasyam sort of has a sense of really living in something. So and so the term Isha Avasyam literally means that Idang Sarvam, all of this is, you could say, to use a Western theological term, indwelled by the Lord. How'd you like that, Drew? In other words, the Lord dwells in all this, pervades all this. Yat kincha, whatever there is. Jagat yang jagat, whatever is moving in the universe. And of course, jagat yang jagat. Or which almost has a sense like whatever is becoming in the world of becoming. And so here, avasyam, to pervade it. To have it as your residence has a sense of possessing. Because after all, if I say this is, it's sort of the same thing to say I live here and this is my house. I mean, Krishna's not a tenant. He's not just a, you know, a rent payer. So to say that this is where I live, if a gentleman or lady says that, it means it's my house. It means the same thing. And so again, you have this sense of indwelling coming to mean possessing or being the Lord over, translated as possessing. And so it's not a bad translation, it just forces you to think, what do we really mean when we say that someone possesses something? It's like if you own, let's say, a vacation house somewhere, but you never go there, and you hire someone just to take care of it for you, guess who really owns it? Like you see sometimes people, you know, they just, somehow they get these jobs, taking care of someone's beautiful house, and the owner never gets to go there, and the person is living there. For all practical purposes, it's theirs to enjoy. And so, these translations force you to think of what the word possess means, or own. You have to think about it more carefully. So, any other questions? I guess time's up. Oh my God, yeah, time's up. Another on-time arrival here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you.